It's the Daily Talk Show, episode 799.
Special guest Nathan Chan from Founder joining us. Welcome to the show, buddy.
Thanks so much for having me, guys. It's a pleasure to be here. Shame I couldn't join you in the studios, just down the road. I'm in Richmond. And yeah, can't move to different suburbs, can we?
Well, we had it scheduled for an in-person, which we always like, but you know, the world's turned upside down. How is it over your side of the world, as in same place, but just your side of the world?
Yeah, it's fine. Just weekends and weekdays blend together and just working around the clock. It's crazy.
Founder magazine. How much do you actually connect with the magazine bit? And when you see things like what's happened with Bauer Media, where do you sort of go to in your head?
So I saw that. I think magazines, media industry, it's an industry that has suffered a lot. And it's only, you know, it's only to be expected, right? Like during times like this, when you rely on one source of income or one main source of income for any business, it's going to be struggle town, I think. Like especially advertising, where it's kind of like a discretionary spend for a lot of companies. It's not something that if you took it away, you know, from those companies, they're going to be like hurting. Like Facebook ads is a different thing. You know, if you take Facebook away, like Facebook ads away from our company, we'll be hurting a lot. So I think, you know, advertising, media, content, there's not many companies out there in the media or publishing space that really, you know, are building sustainable business models. So yeah, it's been interesting, but no, it doesn't, look, we're just like, the magazine is a small part of our business, to answer your question. It's the face of the business, but we have many other things going on. And I see the Founder brand being so much more than just a magazine or online courses or books or what, like all the different forms of media that, or content that we produce.
When you started out, was it... where it is today, how was that in your mind when you began, or has it been a case of getting started and realizing the potential of where you can take a brand like Founder?
So when I started, I had no idea that it would be where it is now, and I had no idea that it would kind of morph and, like, you know, we would change things and we'd have other mediums and all sorts of other things. I just started it as a magazine, as a passion hobby project. Like, it's kind of embarrassing that I started an entrepreneurial magazine and actually didn't know anything about business or startups myself, like literally hardly anything. I had no idea what I was doing. It was a joke. And I just kind of worked it out along the way.
Like, do you think that served you? And what do you wish that you actually did know?
Like, retrospect's one of these like incredible things, right? But it served me a lot because I've approached it from just a lateral thinking standpoint. So, you know, you talk about advertising. We've never, ever really relied on advertising because, like, I just looked at it and we tried it. We tried it on. Even for the Founder podcast, I tried it on. And for the amount of money you make, it's pretty bad. Like, it's really shocking. We tried it on for, like, the magazine. It's really bad. And it's a lot of work. So I've always approached it that way, just what makes sense for us. And just literally not knowing anything, not having any experience in this stuff. And it has kind of served me. But at the same time, you know, I think I could have done things a lot faster, could be, you know, further along on the journey if I knew what I was doing, or if I actually spoke to people that knew what they were doing and learned a lot of hard lessons, you know.
I think probably a consistent trait across entrepreneurs is impatience, or, you know, feeling unsettled that they're not where they want to be. Is that something you've had to battle with?
Yeah. And I think most of the time the problem with that is comparing yourself to others, and then also the idea that it's never enough. Like, the goalposts are always changing. Like, you speak, like, I speak to, like, all these incredible founders all day every day, like billionaires, multi-billionaires, like insanely smart people, insanely successful people, and you ask them, like, is it ever enough? And what do you think they'll tell you? Like, never is.
It's sort of depressing. So how do you look at it? How do you switch up the mindset so you can actually, you know, live a life that's not so painful?
Well, the journey is the reward, and it's all about the ride. It's always trying to be present and just having fun along the way, because it is never enough. And and actually accepting that is actually quite freeing. And it's fun to like chase towards things and accomplish incredible things. And it's like for us and founder as an entrepreneurial business, but like the business itself being an entrepreneurial venture, it's really rewarding, you know, the amount of people that we help and serve, and it's really cool to create something that helps a lot of people at scale or facilitates their growth. So I think when you look at it from that perspective, it's not depressing. It's not daunting. It's not a negative thing. It is what it is.
I saw in January content as you started to work on your new office. Obviously, COVID hits. What does that do to team morale and what you had planned for the year?
Yeah, that was crazy. So, we got this new office, 500 square meters in Chapel, just off Chapel Street, like put a studio in there, decked it out, like spent a lot of money. And literally, we got to spend one day in there to work and then COVID hit. And that one day was our strategy day, working out what the fuck we're going to do.
Yeah. And so what's like, Tommy and I have spoken about this shit a lot, where it's like, obviously there's the advice from the government, but then there's all these other decisions that you just need to make as a business. Did you feel in that moment you were clear on what to do? Were you sort of married to the office? How did you resolve those bigger conversations?
Yeah, so I think when times like this happen, you need to look towards your support system and the people in your corner, and you need to look at history. Like, you know, there's a thing called an economic clock, and it happens, you know, every 7 to 10, 11, 12 years, whatever it is. And you need to find out what companies did or what people did and how they handled times like this. So that was my go-to. When it comes into context for the office, I'm still doing updates on it and bits and pieces. Fortunately, founder as a business, we've been okay, and I'm really grateful that we haven't been hit as hard as local businesses. Most of our audience is in the United States. We're a purely online play. There's no really in-person play. We're doing okay. So yeah, look, everyone's working from home. We've been a fairly remote company anyways. Like, we've got around 12, 13 people in Melbourne, and we're hiring more at the moment. And then everyone else is scattered around the world. We've got an office in New York. So like we have like, I think like 15, 20 people remotely anyway. So for us to work remotely, like we've had it easy compared to most businesses, to be honest, man. Like, yeah.
When this kind of stuff happens and you're in a planning meeting or strategy meeting for a very unknown future, how do you handle it as an individual? What's your mental state in those moments? What do you think comes out? Does it bring the best out of you?
Yeah, so I remember when COVID hit and, founder took a hit, and it was really, really scary. I called one of my good mates, Rory. He runs a company called Hampers with Bite, and he was just like, because he's had business much longer than me, because this is my first business. For context, Founders, my first business. We've been going for about 7 years, and I've never taken any hits before, really. We've been pretty lucky, like, you know, being sued by one of the biggest business magazines in the States when we first opened, like had other you know, trials and tribulations, but nothing like this, where it's like scary and you don't know what's going to happen to the world. And I remember I called him up and we were just chatting for like 2-3 hours, because he's been through all these kind of things. And he said, man, all you can do is just control the controllables. Because like, I was watching the news and all this kind of stuff, and like, I found that actually quite bad for my mindset. It was like really, really, really just fucking with my head. And I was like, you know what? I'm cutting all that shit out. And I was like, I'm just trying to control what I can control. And then I work with like my mentor, one of my coaches as well. And like, we just come up with a plan and then we just stick to the plan and we, you know, present that to the team and we work out with the team in that strategic meeting. Like, we get buy-in and get input. And then that was the one day that we were all in the office and then we came up with that plan and then we executed and then we've thankfully been okay. But, after that, it was like a real rise. Like, it was like a call to action, like a call to the adventure. So for me, I was working 18 hour days, working around the clock. I said to my fiance Emily, like, I just got to like just like make sure we're okay. So I just went crazy and like worked, yeah, probably some of the hardest I've worked in a long time. And now we're okay, and a lot of businesses are on the recovery, thankfully. And mindset wise, I found it quite exhilarating, which is kind of weird, but just that grind, it reminded me of old days founder, like just waking up, working all day every day, and then going to sleep, then working all day every day. Like, that was some of the funnest times, believe it or not, when I first started founder back in my parents' basement. Like, it was just the best. Like, it was actually really fun, like just working, because I just love what I do so much. For me, I think people find that surprising. They're like, you know, do you want to sell founder, or like, you know, what's your exit strategy? Or like, you know, they think like, we just want to make all this money. Yeah, we want to grow. And yeah, like, you know, there's like rewards behind all that. But for me, I just want to do work that I'm passionate about. And I think you never work a day in your life if you love what you do. And that's like the ethos of the brand. That's the ethos of everyone we employ. That's the ethos of, you know, like, what we're trying to do is like really help people, you know, start and grow businesses. And, you know, ideally it's a business that you love. And I think, yeah, that's what my mindset was like. It's, yeah, oh, I ramble too much. Sorry, man. No, you're
good. What was the controllables?
The amount of people that sign up to one of our masterclasses, the amount of people that come to our, like, you know, that we can kind of engage with in some way, shape or form, the amount of staff that we hire or have, or you know, all those kinds of things, what we are focusing on. I think that's a key thing, right? Like, when you look at businesses, a lot of the time it's about like businesses that are growing, it's like the ones that are focused. So we just focused on more higher profit products, like just all the things that I can control, not the external things coming at me. Like, you know, I remember I was even getting on the phone speaking to prospects, and we never do any of that stuff. I was getting on the phone and I was speaking to people and, like, you know, like just hearing like how scared people are, like, you know. But there's, you know, always, like in any business or any market, even in a down market, there's ways to grow. And there's this incredible book that I read, which I highly recommend for anyone that has a business, called Great by Choice by Jim Collins. And he studies all the companies, all these successful companies that grew during a recession. And there's a lot of incredible principles in that book that we've been trying to follow, which we are following. It's been game changing for us. But yeah, those are the controllables, like what content we want to put out, what products we want to launch, what products we want to focus on pushing, you know, how much ads we want, like how much we want to spend in ads, who do we want to hire, who do we want to let go, like all that kind of stuff.
You speak to a lot of, I guess you could say successful, definitely successful from a metric standpoint, individuals from all across the world. Have you found from talking to these people that it's clouded what you think of success? Because I feel like these successful people, they're contagious. You're like, oh, wow, look at what they've got, or look at what they've created. Have you had to steer it back to, no, this is what Nathan wants, this is what founder is after, versus other people's version of success bleeding into it?
It just depends. It depends, like, I think one thing I definitely do know is majority of the people that we speak to are extremely humble. So they're not as arrogant or all these different things that someone might think of someone that's achieved a certain amount of success. And I think that that's part of it, like for a lot of people, is just that humility. But then, you know, there's some people that have an agenda, which, you know, a lot of the time, so do we, right? Like, you know, the reason that we're speaking to those people is because they're looking for press. So they want to talk about a certain thing. But yeah, look, there's one thing that I do find interesting that, you guys might, but you guys speak to a lot of successful people as well. Like, I know you interviewed like Seth Godin and stuff. Is like, a lot of these people are all human beings, and it's often that we put these people up on pedestals, but you know, they all stand on the same, you know, rock hard solid ground. They all bleed, like, all of, like, we're just human beings, right? And you know, the thing that is different between them and perhaps us, or you know everyday people, is really that, you know, they had a, you know, great team and people behind them. They had, you know, just relentless, just thirst and hunger, and they just wanted it bad enough. And they were lucky as well, right? Some people, great timing. You know, I didn't know 4 years ago that, you know, when we started to get into this online courses thing, that, you know, everyone was going to be at home and online education is just booming right now. Mm. Like, I just didn't know, right? Like, so you make your own luck. But at the same time, yeah, these are people that have just been at it for a long time, man. Like, you know, to build anything of true worth and significance, it takes like 7 to 10 years. And that's why I really love and respect what you guys are doing, right? You got that discipline, I was saying offline. Like, you guys just go on every single day and it compounds. Like, that's how we, you know, that's how we built a large-scale Instagram account with like over 2 million followers. Like, we posted every single day. Like, the one day we didn't post because of the Black Lives Matter tile, they actually destroyed us. Like, we were losing followers for like over a month because we told Instagram that, you know, like, we're not posting content anymore. So like, consistency is where it's at.
How do you communicate your vision to a team?
Just do it often. Like, I think it has to come from within, and it has to come from a place of, I guess, giving. I think that's really, really important. It can't be selfless. And I think it's got to be, you know, it's got to be a problem or something that you're really, really passionate about. And you've got to be thinking big.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, how do you? I think you do it like when it matters, or when it links back to why somebody should have done something, or perhaps why it's not part of, like, you know, getting us towards that vision. One thing that we do at Founders, we have like a weekly strategic meeting, which is called a traffic light meeting, where we analyze what our goals are for the quarter and what our goals are for the year and how we're going to bring like our big long-term vision to life. But I think it's a difficult question to ask. Like, how do you communicate your vision to your team? I think it's just something that you should speak about often. I should speak about it more. And it's just, when it feels like, you know, it's around the purpose and the reason mm-hmm. that we do the work we do.
Did you think that with all COVID, it's fucking annoying that we always end up speaking about COVID, but it seems like it's such a massive thing in our life right now. Communicating to the team around we're moving to the office and the hopes and the dreams, and speaking to a videographer and saying, so this is like, get ready for game day. This is when you're going to shine, and pumping everyone up. How do you then have the conversation when so much of the narrative is built into something that can't be anymore? Do you have any thoughts or sort of mechanisms to be able to re-communicate when there has been such a big shift?
Yeah. So, look, I think one thing that is important is during any hard times, or if you say something, like, one of our values at Founder is like determined to deliver, and we do what we say we're going to do, because I think that's a good philosophy to have in life. Like, I said I'd be here for this interview, I'm here, right? Mm-hmm. Like, and I think, you know, anytime you can't do something, or, you know, something's changed, or like, you know, we're going to move into this whiz bang crazy office and we can't, just got to say hello to the elephant in the room. And you know, like, you know, I've, like, last year we made some calls, we didn't have the growth we were looking for, And, you know, you have to be prepared to show that vulnerability and say hello to the elephant in the room and say, you know what, guys, like, I made some calls that didn't pay off and that's on me and I'll own it as a leader. I think that's all you can do, right? Just like, just hardcore ownership.
Is that, would you say how you deal with failure? As in, yep. You know, if you're a business owner, it's about what you do with it when it comes?
Yeah, so I think I'm a big fan of like taking ownership of things and, you know, taking like responsibility for any outcome, even if it's out of your control, and just owning it. I think that the sooner that you can do that, I know that might sound a little savage, like I'm talking in a business sense, mm-hmm. right? Let's just keep this in a business context. I think, yeah, when you can do that, then you can just move on and learn from it, right? Like, I'm just a really big fan of just like keep moving, take ownership, learn from it. What have I learned from it? Make sure I don't do it again. And just, yeah, keep moving. When it comes to failure, though, I actually do try really hard to avoid failure. I know a lot of people say they shouldn't fear failure. I actually do. And I think most people say they don't, or if they act, if they are fearless, are lying to you. I think everyone has a fear of failure in some way, shape, or form. But one thing I always try and do, and I'm massive on this, is learning from people that have done it. Like as an example, you guys want to build a big scale podcast and you want to know how to do that, right? And I saw you tracking your downloads and stuff, right? Like, I would want to make sure I speak to the biggest podcasters out there to make sure that if any future problems that I might face, I can get that insight, because then I can not have these failures all the time. And I think having that guidance and having a good source of advice is so game changing when it comes to avoiding failures and also tackling them if they happen, to learn from them.
You mentioned a mentor and you have a coach before. Is that something that you invest in, and yep. how often do you have these catch-ups?
110%. So many people, they say like, oh yeah, I want a mentor, but then they expect someone to just donate their time for free when they obviously have something you want, and it's obviously valuable, the knowledge that they have. And it's going to take time, and they would be losing something from giving you their time. So, I happily invest in mentors. I have a coach who I spend a lot of money with every single month, and I catch up with him every week. And he's somebody that's actually built a big business himself. And then I have I have many mentors that I speak to all the time. I'm looking for another one, a domain expertise mentor who's built a large scale publishing business.
Josh, is that you, mate?
Mm-hmm. Like as in domain names?
He's got a large portfolio.
Yeah, what do you want? I've got a few domain names.
With your coach that you catch up with once a week, what does the session look like? And what is the thing that you think he does really well that works for you?
Yeah, so I've found when it comes to mentorship, there's kind of two kinds. Like let's just say in anything, right? Like let's just take business out, the concept of business out of it, just anything. If you want to, what are we trying to do here? We're trying to achieve some form of mastery or some form of a goal or both, right? So when it comes to coaching or mentorship for whatever that goal is or whatever that business is or whatever, you know, like mastery that you want to achieve, you've got to have someone that keeps you accountable, and you've got to have someone that keeps pushing you along and guiding you along the way. But then you've got to have someone. So that's Steve for me. Steve is my coach, but also a mentor, but I catch up with him every single week, and we look at our annual plan. Are we on track for our annual plan? Because we've broken it down by the quarter, and then we look at our weekly plan as well.
Is that financials or what does the plan look like?
Everything. Team, content, amount of people we serve, the amount of students, revenue, like finances, everything. We break it all down. So we use this traffic light system. So what we do, right, is this is the way that I've always focused on growing Founder, is we have what is called a traffic light system.
And is this from a book or something, or like who developed it?
Yeah, it's a concept from a book called Scaling Up by Vern Harnish. Mm-hmm. It's quite a common practice. And basically all the key functions of every department of Founder, we set goals for them. And then we have an overall revenue goal and target for student enrollments, impact, etc. And that's our annual target. And then we break it down by the quarter, and then we break it down by the week. So remember when I talked about like how often do I communicate the Founder vision, and we check in on how we're tracking and all that kind of stuff? That was that weekly meeting. So when I catch up with Steve every week, he's going through. He's like, how's this going? How's this going? How's this going? How's this person performing? Oh, like, you know, and he's just coaching me. Like he's giving me CEO and leadership coaching, but then he's also kind of coaching me through problems and how to solve certain things. And, you know, maybe this isn't jiving, or like, you know, we've got a problem here, or like, you know, where should we allocate, you know, funds or budget here, or what do we do to solve that? So that's what that one looks like. And then, yeah, the other, you know, so he keeps me accountable, and he's always pushing me, and he's teaching me how to be a great CEO. And that's one kind of coach. Or mentor. And then the other one is that I'm looking for, and I have had before, is someone that is domain specific. So Steve hasn't built a large scale online education company. He hasn't built a large scale media or publishing company. So I need to find someone that has.
And so when you started, you know, you put $2,000 on a credit card, you back yourself. When it's just you, risk is easy because you're dying your own sword. I guess when you have a team or you're working with a group, risk can be seen differently. How do you navigate risk now that you have a team?
Yeah, so it's so funny you say that, because I feel, maybe it's because I'm here now, but mm-hmm. I feel there's so much more risk doing what we do now versus starting with $2,000 on the back of a credit card. Because like, it's just so much more on your shoulders, right? Mm-hmm. Like we have multiple offices we got to upkeep.
It's massive. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. 30, it's like, yeah. the buy-in that you have to, the $2,000 is nothing, right? Like, but if you're, I'm guessing as you go bigger, then you're taking on, okay, a six-figure lease, or saying I'm going to put cash into this content or whatever it is where you haven't seen the results yet. So what is the process in identifying so it is mitigating that risk for you?
Yeah, so I'm so sorry to interrupt. So I hate risk, and I'm always looking to mitigate however I can. The two things that I think about, the first one is cash flow reserves, and you know, Jim Collins talks about this in his book, Great by Choice, which he refers to as oxygen in the tank. So I'm always trying to maintain like a really healthy amount of cash flow reserves. Ideally, you want to have at least 6 months worth of operating expenses. So if your business wasn't bringing in anything, you could survive for 6 months. That's the first thing. And then the second thing, which we're starting to work on more than ever now as Founder, is recurring revenue. I really like the idea of not signing somebody up or selling a product and then that's it. Mm-hmm. That's where the facilitation of value creation just stops. I like the idea of having a subscription base, it yields predictability, and having mm-hmm. a big subscription base. So they're the two things that I'm doing to manage risk. And then as well, it comes with confidence. Like I remember like 3-4 years ago, I was like so scared to hire anyone. And then you just slowly build up and there's levels, right? And like imagine having 100 people, 1,000, you know, that'd be scary.
what the scariness was it what you thought it was or it was it just something that was appearing that might not have necessarily been real?
It wasn't as scary, definitely wasn't scary as well as thought it was. And I think The way I've always operated is I put myself in positions where I just don't have a choice but to just get it done. Like, we got to hire a lot of people this quarter, and like, it's kind of scary, that thought of like how much that's going to cost, but I don't really have a choice because we got so many things we got to do. Like, you know, other people in the team are hurting, like we promised these resources, we just got to get it done and then just work it out. And yeah.
You mentioned thinking big earlier. It's something I feel like you watch someone like Grant Cardone, 10x everything. You probably 10x his dinner. Cash is trash. You see a guy like that who is just thinking big. I mean, what's thinking big?
Did you guys ever see my interview with him?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Did he ask you how much money you had in the bank?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
What did you say? Because you didn't. So,
this is a good one. Right, this is a really good one. Right. We actually took that interview down.
Oh, really?
That down, the reason is just because he's quite a controversial character, and I don't really want us to be associated with him. But
is it true you flew on his jet, public, or is that no? Just a rumor, but joking.
Isn't that funny? Like, he was like, "Oh, you know, you got like, if you got all this money in the bank, why don't you spend it and stuff?" And yeah. You know, then COVID hit. I'm fucking glad we did. But yeah, when it comes to thinking big, look, I have a lot of respect for like what Grant's done. You know, love him or hate him, he's a very successful guy. It was a crazy interview. It was a good laugh. I didn't expect him to kind of challenge me like that. But when it comes to thinking big, I've found personally that that's an American thing. I'm not sure if you guys have picked that up, but in America, people just think like 100x bigger compared to Australia. And I'm fortunate that I get to speak to a lot of people from America and stuff like that. And I speak to all these insanely successful founders and it rubs off on me. And that, I think, you know, when it comes to thinking big, I think it comes back to mindset as well. Like, let's just say, as an example, somebody wants to, you know, build a company that's a $1 million company, right? You want to make $1 million in revenue a year.
Cash is trash.
Yeah, cash is trash. You got to put in property. But let's just say you want to hit that, right? Let's just say you want to hit that. I think if you've already done that in your mind, and because inherently you're thinking big, like if you've inherently already done that in your mind, then half the battle is won. Maybe even 75% of the battle is won. Right. So that's why I'm a really big fan of thinking big and dreaming big. And it's just kind of part of entrepreneurial ethos. You look at someone like Elon Musk, like in the new office, we got this mural painted of Elon. It's so awesome. And, he's just such an exceptional person, like the way that he thinks, like to want to take people to Mars. Right. Mm. Or like.
He's thinking big. So that's that's the epitome of thinking big, right? And so when it comes to Australia, maybe it's the size of the country. I mean, we have such a small, minute scale of people here compared to the US. What do you think it is about why Australians might not think big like the Americans do?
I think definitely tall poppy syndrome exists. Maybe not as much. I don't know. I'm not saying I'm a victim of it by any means. But I think that definitely exists. And I think this concept of the American dream is much more prominent in America versus Australia. And you have to remember as well, you look at places like, you know, these clusters like Silicon Valley, that's where all the big successful companies are coming out of, like big tech startups anyways, like mainly. And it's just like, it's just in the culture more, I think. I don't know why, but yeah,
It feels like there's a bit of individualism there, or like there's definitely the celebration of the unique individual entrepreneur. Having spent so much.
Too.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, spending so much time researching and speaking to founders, what have you worked out to be the bullshit that everyone's worrying about versus what actually makes a difference when it comes to having a successful company?
From from your everyday person side or like the founder
side? Yeah,
I
think like there's the obvious, like you hear people talking, like they don't talk small business anymore. They talk startup. They're no longer a small business owner. They're a founder. People are looking at venture capitalists and angel investors and all of the stuff that I guess is a bit rah-rah. And I think that in some ways, like using one example would be Richard Branson example. I remember saying to Tommy ages ago when we started, where I would like to consume the stories of those people who are making their first million or 2 million. Like the pipe dream is great for an overarching mindset shift, but to actually, I feel like for us to be successful, it's like you need to be working out how to make $1, then, you know, $10, then $100. What are those bits, do you think, when people are getting started that, for one, they get distracted by, and two, the things you think they should actually be focusing on?
Yeah. So, look, there's no doubt about it that entrepreneurship is the new cool, mm-hmm. or like doing a side hustle or something on the side or wanting to start a business is the new cool. And I think a lot of people get caught up in that. And I think a lot of people get obsessed with the idea and not the problem.
Did you ever think that you got there, or like, is it easy to, especially day to day being in it, have you had to check yourself to make sure that you don't buy into the rah-rah?
Yeah, of course. Yeah. Like when people are telling you all day, every day, like, you know, how good your company is, how big it is, or like how fast you're growing and all that kind of stuff, like it's really hard. Like, you know, mm-hmm. you start to believe that trash. Like, you got to really try and, you know, that's why, you know, my mum's really good keeping me humble and stuff, or trying to, and like, yeah, stuff like that. It's really important. But yeah, I think coming back to it, man, I think a lot of the time, I think it's about the problem you're solving. And I think if people spent more time on the problem they're solving, and just being realistic, like, you know, a lot of people that have these crazy ideas, like they want to create like a social media network, or like just silly stuff, like just being realistic, like how can you just find like something simple to solve? Like, I'll give you an example. So this is my partner Emily's company, and it's called Healthish. And it's a
is this a live read?
Yeah. This is an integration. Here, this is the best integration we've ever had.
Yeah. So
seamless.
The reason I tell you guys this, because I think it's a really good example of a great business. Mm-hmm. So there's time indicators for the first half of the day on when you should drink, and there's time indicators on the second half of the day on when you should drink. So if you fill this up 2 times a day, that's 2 liters. It's a 1 liter water bottle, and they say you should drink 2 liters of water a day. So this solves the problem of helping people like drink more water, and it's just got daily reminders on the bottle. Like, such a simple idea, but such a painkiller problem.
So what was the problem that you were solving when you set out for Founder? What was the problem? And then, because I think that people think about their internal problems. For you, it's like, I fucking hate my job. I'm a support IT worker. I don't want to be here. There's that problem. So some people just start businesses based off of that. How do you go into the problem of the customer?
See, what's interesting with me, and I'll be honest, is when I started Founder, it was just for fun and I didn't think about the problem. Mm-hmm. But I did want to find work that I was passionate about, and I did know that there wasn't any magazines or content out there that I could really relate to, where it was really in-depth, it was really actionable, it was really strategical, and, you know, like it wasn't so much like Warren Buffett or like the top 100 billionaires. It was more real. Mm-hmm. And that's what I started with. And then as I went out there along the way, I found some really key problems to solve. And then
what are they now?
Brand. Well, the biggest problem right now that we're trying to solve at Founder is like, how do we bring, you know, just next level entrepreneurial content to people that actually shows you how to start or grow a business, whether that's in the form of online courses or whether that's in the form of a podcast or a video. So if you watch our content or read our content or do one of our courses, it will really solve that problem, taught by people that have actually done it. Mm-hmm. There's so much rubbish out there right now where so many people are an expert or quote unquote guru, or like it's just like it's just so bad. So that's the problem we're trying to solve, is how do we really, really, truly help someone start or grow their business on any topic? So if we actually produce a blog post on, as an example, how to grow your Instagram following, it'll probably be the best blog post you've ever read, and actually breaks down how to exactly do it. And if people, like, you know, think, okay, well, maybe like, you know, that's not enough for me, I want my hand held a little more through the process, then, you know, we have a free masterclass, or like we have a, you know, a whole online course how to do it. But that is in essence everything that we're trying to do at Founder.
Where do you think small businesses are not seeing as an area to play in? So it could be, you know, keeping a mailing list. Is there one thing that you'd sort of suggest from the conversations you've had with entrepreneurs that you think small business owners starting out are missing?
It's tricky when you say small business. I think a lot of the time, from my experience, people, once they do start their business or they have a business and it's going and they're making sales, I think one thing they never really nail is their selling system. Like, I think that's just something that so many small business owners struggle with, is how to sell their product or their service. How do they get more clients? How do they get more customers? And there's this incredible book that I've read that I recommend called Ready, Fire, Aim, where it talks about how to go from 0 to 100 million. And it breaks down all the different stages. And one of the things that it talks about is when you want to go from the 0 to 1 million phase, or wherever it is, like you just want to get your business in the, you know, you want to hit your goals, or you want to take it to the next level. It talks about, you know, working out what your selling system is. So whether that's, you know, if, let's just say as an example, you're a graphic designer, like how do you get prospects? How do you get people on the phone? Are you getting them on the phone? Like, do you send proposals? Do you do webinars? Like, whatever it is, like, do you go door to door? Do you send pamphlets? Do you send brochures? Like, you need to find one way to consistently get somebody that becomes a customer, like whether it's every day, whether it's every week, whether it's every month. Like, you need to have a system that's predictable, and that you, if you just keep doing it, you'll grow.
Are you good at sales?
Yeah. I think I've grown to be decent at it because I've had to. I think I'm much better at marketing than selling. I've had no professional sales training. Yeah.
And so with the early days of the magazine, are you like, I could imagine it being similar to podcasting, where we can focus on a lot of metrics in podcasting that doesn't actually bring us any closer to cash. We can do a great marketing thing. We can look like top dogs, but we can have no cash. And so how do you transition Founder, or was there a pivotal moment where you're like, actually, so for instance, the charts or magazines or the search engine optimization, being able to rank highly for those things, yep, was that actually making you money, or was there something else that triggered it?
Yeah, so I did two things in the early days, or three things that allowed me to grow Founder in the early days that got me through. The first thing was the Richard Branson edition. I made that free. So instead of charging for it, I gave it away for free, and I made that kind of the loss leader. And also, that's what really helped develop the Founder brand and really legitimize the brand as an entrepreneurial player.
Was it in an ecosystem? Was it on like Apple, or like, you hear about people like going to that event where there's Gary Vee and Grant Cardone, there's Amazon specialists and stuff like that. Did you see yourself playing in a specific ecosystem at that point?
No. It was literally like, I just wonder, like, for me, and I know it might be hard to understand or believe, but like, no, I wanted a job in marketing. No one would give me a job. And I just wanted to find work that I was passionate about. The first edition of the magazine I launched, we made $5.50. And I just fell in love with the process. And it was so much fun. And it was quite addictive. Like, you know, your first sale for anything is just like, it's next level, that feeling. And you just want to grow, right? And I was like, I want to do this all day, every day, right?
And
I
want that freedom. The Richard Branson, that was your loss leader. Sorry, I butted in. So, yeah, what were the other areas?
Yeah, Richard Branson was the loss leader. That helped. And then the second thing was App Store optimization, which I think you're alluding to. Mm-hmm. I worked out how to rank on all of the top key terms for any top business magazines like Forbes, Fast Company, Entrepreneur. And then the last thing was like I was consistent. Like I just like kept putting out a new magazine, and that's the thing, right? It just compounded. And I spoke as well. I spoke to other successful digital magazine owners that had a much bigger subscriber and readership than we did at the time, right? So these are the things that like I did to just take it to the next level. And that recurring revenue was a game changer. Recurring revenue, I'm big fan. Big fan of recurring revenue, because I could just see it going up every single month. First month it was $40. Next month it was like a few hundred dollars. Next month it was a few hundred more. And it just kept going up. So yeah, I think especially during now today's climate, some sort of membership, recurring subscription offering. Yeah, I really like that.
Mate, thank you so much for your time, dude. It's been great to finally connect. It's good when there's good eggs coming out of Melbourne. It's a great city.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah, no, thanks so much for having me, guys. Like I said, I love the work. And yeah, just keep putting in the time. And yeah, have to catch up soon. If there's anything I can do to help, please do let me know.
Definitely. Yeah, from my side, I've been following, I feel like for a long time, I used to work at Envato, and I remember you being in there visiting. And yeah, it's great to see the amount of growth that you've had. I think that we fetishize growth, or we sort of give it a lot of weight, but there is also the personal growth in being able to work out how to take the passion that you're talking about, that feeling of like being on the train and being like, fuck it. Like there's a huge gap between that and what you've built today. So it's super inspiring. Thanks for being on the show.
Oh, thanks so much, guys. Really appreciate it. And yeah, like I said, really, really love what you're doing. If there's anything I can do to help, please do let me know.
Thanks, Nathan. It's the Daily Talk Show. See you tomorrow, guys. Have a good one.
See you, guys.